Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and back on the show, I have that unbelievably strong guy who just happens to, you know, do incredible feats of strength every single day, and sometimes he lifts, and that's Max Shank. Max, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? I don't know if that's a super accurate.
It's a terrible introduction. That goes up there for like one of the worst introductions that I've done, and it's only because I fumbled up with the recording software to get started, and I just wanted to continue to go.
Well, it's funny because you've met me. I mean, we spent the whole day in Long Beach basically doing no lifting whatsoever and eating ice cream and churros.
Yep, that's right.
So I feel like you're really misleading your whole audience right now, and shame on you for that.
No, you're right. And I think if there's anything that we can both agree on is that the stand over on the pier down in – across from the Long Beach Convention Center has a great stand. It's kind of hidden, but fantastic churros. And on a nice hot August day, they can really hit the spot and allows for even better conversation between colleagues and good debate.
Without a doubt. That was like the ice cream brain trust right there. It was a beautiful thing.
That's right. That was you, me, Coach Steve-O, and Brendan Rerick. And over the course of maybe, I think we probably sat there for an hour. Then I got back to the booth and I'm like, yay, this is great because now I'm sunburned with a bald head and short sleeves. Great.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
But, you know, we have lots of other stuff to talk about today. And just to get it, get the discussion going ahead of time. I mean, you've been putting together just some fantastic quality content, and we'll end up talking about it throughout the interview, but you have a new ebook out called Simple Shoulder Solution. And this is like one of those things that for me, it's like almost like, oh man, it's the perfect program at the perfect time, or it's the perfect book, I should say, at the perfect time, because like one of my big limiting factors for my strength has been being able to, you know, press overhead. And even as I'm trying to get to the 52 kg get up, like that's the thing that still has me kind of has me worried. It's just like being able to keep a 52 kg. I guess that's like what, 111 pounds, 112 pounds pressed up overhead.
Oh, it's massively heavy. I mean, kudos to you for giving it a go. At those weights, I actually prefer a barbell just because it doesn't feel like it's trying to actively snap my wrist off of my body.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Let's talk about this for a second. So tell me why and tell me how you set it up.
Just like anything else, I think you always want to use the right tool for the job. And I think with bells, like, I mean, once you get to 48 kilos, that's kind of a little bit of a ceiling for how heavy of a kettlebell I'd want to use for a get up. I have kettlebells at the gym that go all the way up to 203 pounds. Mm-hmm. And there's no way in hell I would want even the 150 pound bell to be pulling me backward.
Exactly.
Passively into more shoulder flexion than I can control. Mm-hmm. So that offset weight is the two-edged sword. On the one hand, it can help you build more shoulder flexion and help get you more flexibility. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it can take you to a position where you probably shouldn't be in the first place. Mm-hmm. So what you'd be better off doing once you get that heavy is actually using a dumbbell or especially a barbell, just at least occasionally, so you know where vertical truly is. Because mm-hmm. if the bigger the weight gets, the more forward angle your arm has to have and the more pressure is on your wrist. So you really are much better off going that heavy. I mean, I think I've done like 165 pounds on a get up is my best. And I can't imagine even using the 150 pound kettlebell. The barbell was much, I don't want to say easier because it was hardly easy, but you definitely have to go slow, but at least the weight is completely centered rather than the kettlebell, where that offset weight just gets exponentially more difficult as you go, like I said, above that 40 to 48 kilo range.
Okay, so maybe this can just be my excuse to say, all right, well, 48 is like maybe good enough, because then like the thing that I've been playing around with in my mind is, you know, Kev, you have to kind of practice what you preach a little bit, and where is the risk reward on this going over 48 kg besides being just like a really good Instagram video? Is it really worth, you know, working up to that 52 kg? Instead, maybe I spend some of that energy and some of that volume working on something else, like, you know, maybe just improving my one arm overhead press or, you know, something else.
Well, you know, the common denominator that we all have in common, I guess, to say it very stupidly, is time is our most precious resource.
Right.
So when you talk about specialization like you are, you have to talk about the primary thing, which is diminishing marginal returns.
Exactly.
It's a simple economics term. Basically says for every extra unit of time you put in, you get a little bit less benefit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the cornerstone of the Ultimate Athleticism program, actually, because if you want to be an elite level power lifter, Olympic lifter, CrossFitter, piano player, anything, you have to pull time from other things that you could potentially be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stop instead somewhere close to that diminishing marginal returns level, it affords you more time to do other things.
Right.
Like right now, I'm not really pushing my deadlift very hard because I've kind of gotten to the point where getting a heavier deadlift would require a level of specialization and time that I'm just not willing to invest. I would much rather play around with some more flexibility work, do more backflips, or play more piano at this point than try to dedicate more time to deadlifting. So you kind of use that to answer your question, really. You might be just fine with making a 48 kilo get up look perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that you've definitely hit a point of diminishing marginal returns already. Now, I'm not trying to give you permission to quit lifting forever and say, Kevin, you're strong enough now. But you have to think about, you know, what are you trying to do? What's the goal? You know, for me, I like being able to jump high and run fast. And I know that taking my deadlift from around the, well, to be fair, I can get it around the 600 range if I train for it. But without training for it specifically at all and training for it fairly easily, I'm in like the 550 mark. So there's a little bit of a drop. And I know that if I practiced for 4 weeks, I could get right up to where I was before. But I know that increasing my deadlift that little bit, well, it's not a little bit, I guess, but that bit isn't going to help any of the other things that I'm trying to do. So in the grand scheme of things, it's sort of a waste of time for me to do anything other than maintain my deadlift. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes complete sense. And it's not like you're helping me rationalize it or whatnot, but like it's just when you get to that territory of, you know, the 48 and the 52, like even I was talking with Artemis Scanalides about this and she was like, yeah, like, you know, just a heads up, like as you get towards that weight, like, she knew someone that was working up to something around that range and like his arm just literally broke while trying to do a get up. And even more so, since I do all my get ups in a living room with a hardwood floor with nothing but a rug underneath me. And, you know, I would rather not have to pay for the expenses of fixing a hardwood floor and the,
totally,
the consequences of a broken arm or broken wrist or whatever, that would be significantly detrimental to what I do in life.
I think you definitely want to – I think every exercise, every set of every exercise, every rep of every exercise, every workout, and every goal should be reevaluated frequently to determine if you're really going in the direction you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have to sit back and go, well, why do I want to do a get up with more than the 52 kilo kettlebell?
Mm-hmm.
What is that going to give me? And what is my opportunity cost? So what am I potentially sacrificing for that goal?
Jeez, this is like, you know, financial analysis talk, man.
Well, that's actually my secret passion. If I wasn't doing fitness stuff, it would be something in finance. You know, most of my education is actually in economics, both while in school and out of school, because it's just a, it's a fascinating look at how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
It's, so just, yeah, just applying those principles to training has given me and the people that I work with huge amounts of success, and at a very reasonable price.
Well, let's stick with, you know, just talking about overhead work, because this is something that is discussed quite a bit among strength coaches and trainers and stuff like that. But, there's definitely a subset of the population that tries to almost avoid all overhead work just because of, you know, the need to having to go through like the work of like screening someone, making sure that they can pass those prerequisites to press overhead and to then not have to deal with any kind of shoulder pain in the aftermath of a day of, you know, even starting to integrate overhead pressing. So I was wondering if you have any prerequisites that you have for, you know, your clients before you allow them to overhead press. What do you look at and what do you look out for once they start overhead pressing, just to make sure it's not going to, you know, cause them any discomfort?
Well, typically, and as a gym owner, I need all of my coaches to be able to make some quick on the fly evaluations if they see something that's not right. So obviously when people come in first, we're going to evaluate their basic ranges of motion, internal external rotation, and especially shoulder flexion and shoulder extension. If a person can't reach their arm overhead without their upper trap lighting up like a Christmas tree, we're probably going to keep them off of any kind of overhead work, at least direct overhead work. Now, what I've found, what we found, is that things like a landmine press, for example, which is kind of a like an incline press, mm-hmm. works pretty well for these people.
Yeah.
And that, in conjunction with some mobility work, can get them back to overhead pretty quickly. And actually, as a side note, sometimes when you put a weight in someone's hand, some of the problems actually go away. Now, I might get crucified for it, but you know, the bottom up press, the bottom up kettlebell press is kind of a magical little exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had more than 20 instances of someone coming in with shoulder problems or shoulder pain or something like that when they press. And I say, well, hey, you know, try this one just instead. Try flipping the kettlebell upside down. I mean, literally, that's the only coaching I give. Now, I tell them how to set it up and where to put the grip and how to squeeze, that kind of thing, whatever. And at least 20 times I've seen people have pain with a regular press and no pain and good shoulder mechanics with a bottom-up press. And I believe the reason stems from the fact that the bottom-up press forces you to reflexively engage the rotator cuff, makes the rotator cuff fire automatically, forces you to squeeze the bell the whole time, which is going to facilitate even better rotator cuff activation. It also tends to have people tense their abs appropriately to help stabilize the pelvis, which is going to allow the lat to also provide stability. And it's also, if the lat's doing its job, then the teres can do its job. So basically, there's this whole idea that if you have one area not doing its job or one area that's really stiff, you piss off the neighbors. And in the case of the shoulder, that's typically the neck and the thoracic spine and the core and the shoulder blade. So you have your glenohumeral joint, which is the ball and socket in the end. And if you don't have the shoulder blade able to move well and stabilize, and if you don't have a mobile cervical and thoracic spine, and if you don't have a core that works, and if you have a dysfunctional breathing pattern, that glenohumeral joint may not be the source of the problem, but that's going to be where the problem is felt. This is where all the problems are caused, or sorry, not caused, but realized, because you have the most mobile and most vulnerable joint in the whole body at the end of this basically chain of dysfunctional joints. And so the last link in the chain is going to be the one that takes on the brunt of the problems.
Let's talk a little bit more about the bottoms up press, because that's something, you know, obviously we've seen that as well at our facility with people that have complain about, you know, shoulder discomfort with overhead pressing, you get them up in that bottoms up position and they're good to go, even especially with our overhead athletes. So I was wondering, do you tend to program that in for everyone as a starting point for overhead pressing, or will you use just like other like rack kettlebell position starting positions for overhead pressing?
Bottom up pressing is probably 80% of the overhead kettlebell pressing that we'll do.
Okay.
Quite honestly, because every time I try to plug in more regular presses, I wonder why. Mm-hmm. Because the bottom up press is just far superior for several reasons.
Because one, you can press more.
Totally. That's right. It's like it's a total ego thing. So here's the interesting thing about that, and I'll get back to that in just a second. The bottom up press automatically and reflexively makes people do all the things I want them to do anyway. Exactly. It forces them to keep their eyes on it, forces them to focus, forces them to slow down. Mm-hmm. And more importantly than that, even, is I came to this realization that the difference between a standard kettlebell press and a bottom-up press is the same as the difference between your active and passive flexibility gap. Are you familiar with the active and passive flexibility gap?
No, fill me in.
Okay, so the active and passive flexibility gap is the difference between the range of motion that your joint can be pulled into passively versus the range of motion that you can actively pull your joint into. So for example, if you're laying down on your back, you use your hip flexors to lift one leg up as far as you can. So you're trying to do like a split. Mm-hmm. That would be your active flexibility, wherever it stops. Passive flexibility would be if you took a strap over your foot and ankle and pulled your foot toward your head, right, toward a split. So what they've found is that the bigger the gap between your active and passive flexibility, the more likely you are to be injured, because it means you can take your joint to a range of motion that you can't control. And that's a big way how injuries happen. Now, the reason that's important is in the bottom-up kettlebell press versus the standard kettlebell press, you have a similar gap. And what it means is if you have a big gap between your standard military press and your bottom-up kettlebell press, you have a lot of horsepower with no brakes and no steering and bald tires. I've seen a lot of really, really strong guys with totally jacked up shoulders press huge weights overhead, and it looks a little weird. Like, you've probably seen it. Looks a little bit like a tricep extension. There's a lot of internal rotation and spiraling as it goes upward. It doesn't look super coordinated. The lockout's not very tight. Give them a kettlebell and turn it upside down, and it's almost like their shoulder doesn't even know how to function anymore. So they have all this strength, all this horsepower, but absolutely no way of controlling it. Mm-hmm. So what I've also found is that the bigger the gap is between your bottom-up press and your regular military press, is the more likely you are to hurt your shoulder and the more likely you are to just have faulty mechanics. So you end up building these really bad patterns because there's no accountability for the movement. And that's why the bottom-up press is almost kind of magic.
Well, there you go, folks. Maybe you should be starting to implement the bottoms-up press, and especially if you're getting stuck at using the same 32 kg to press overhead for weeks and weeks and weeks. Okay, fine. I'll do it.
I would say that you should have a gap of one bell size.
Yeah, I have way more than that. Okay. All right. And also I have the older, maybe you're the right person to ask. So I have like some of the like really old Perform Better kettlebells that don't have they're smooth. They're not rigid, or I guess they're not rough in terms of the grip or anything like that. What's the word of that I'm looking for? Textured or something like that.
Uh-huh. Right.
So would it make sense? Would it be okay if I, you know, got some like hockey tape or whatever and tape those up so they're easier to grip, or should I still kind of work with those kettlebells even though they're a little bit slippery, especially as your hands sweat and stuff? And I can't, again, I'm in my living room, not going to probably have a tub of chalk with me.
Well, I mean, given that you're not going to be in your living room, you could definitely do that. I wouldn't put something quite as aggressive as tape, although that might not be a horrible option. To be honest with you, I've never tried it. Mm-hmm. You, in general, you might just enjoy taking like a file or some sandpaper and scoring it a little bit like that anyway.
Yeah, I should totally do that. That's a great idea.
But with chalk, even if it's smooth, it shouldn't matter. But if you're not going to be using a bunch of chalk, then I totally get you.
Okay.
Yeah, you definitely would. How big is your gap, if you don't mind sharing?
Honestly, I haven't done bottoms-up presses in like 4 months. Because again, it's totally an ego thing. And it's like when, you know, I started posting like a lot of my training on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, I'm just like, all right, well, I'm just going to do whatever I'm best at today. I usually, you know, it's not like, it's not very much like, us fitness professionals to just show our biggest weakness on social media. I'll give it a look tomorrow because I'm going to be over at pressing, or maybe not tomorrow, but, this weekend. And I will let you know.
Yeah, beautiful. I'd be very curious to know, based on your get-ups, you know, because the get-up is often heralded as this like awesome shoulder mobility drill. And it is. It's a good drill for building stability in the shoulder through a wide range of vectors. However, it'd be interesting to see what that bottom-up press looks like. And you're a pretty athletic, strong guy, so it shouldn't be too big, but you never know. And you could have a ton of potential ahead of you.
Well, we'll get back to people on that, and I will have a full update later on. But I'm gonna start sprinkling in some questions from the audience because I did ask for some questions, and it usually tends to be that I'll talk to someone for an hour, and then I won't end up asking any of the questions that I ask people to submit. So we had some people on Facebook that were asking about, and specifically Cass Barrett, what'd you think of the FRCMS? What'd you think of that experience in the event?
I thought it was great. I mean,
let's talk about speed and stuff. I don't know if you could give like a brief intro on what that's all about and what your experience has been with it previously.
Sure. No, what I liked is that, the main thing I took away from that is I liked the fact that he wasn't trying to sell anyone on magic. And I think my biggest pet peeve in the fitness industry is anyone who says, hey, listen, all that stuff you've been doing before is total bullshit. This is going to fix you in 1 minute or something like
one
that.
Session,
you know, it's the same bullshit as people saying, oh, you're going to build 20 pounds of muscle in 15 days or, you know, whatever the whole thing is, which is completely ridiculous. How much benefit a person gets within a short time period is based on so many factors that have almost nothing to do with the program they're actually on. Mm-hmm. But so basically, I thought the FRCMS was really good. It involved a lot of joint circles, which I'm a huge fan of. And I think I've talked, maybe I talked last time about my idea of the expert Venn diagram. I kind of just think of every expert as having a body of knowledge. And whenever there's the most overlap on things, that's the stuff that I tend to focus on. Mm-hmm. So he was another person who was a big fan of isometrics, who was a big fan of joint circles. And I liked that he, like I said, didn't say it was magic. He said, you know, rehab and trying to build range of motion can be really hard work, and it's a significant time investment. I think my favorite thing he said was someone asked him, like, how often should they do their drills? And he said, you should quit your job and do them all day long. And I thought that was pretty good. Because it kind of communicates how important it is to invest a significant amount of time. Now, for me, most of the information, and I talked to Dr. Spina, who actually mentioned he hates being called Dr. Spina. So I talked to Dre after the course, and you know, it wasn't a ton of new information for me. It was a lot of. It was just so well organized, though. Like I do wish that I had taken something like that sooner in my career. Because there are certain courses where everything is just really nicely laid out, and you don't have to go and read 15 books and take 100 different courses and blend them all together. I think as far as mobility is concerned, it was really fantastic. I thought that his lectures were pretty much on point in terms of the anatomy and his school of thought on that. I had a great experience. It was great.
For people who are would like some more information. It's Andrew Espina's functional range conditioning course. And I guess this is a new course, or I guess it's, I don't know if he renamed it or not, but it's now the course is functional range conditioning mobility specialist course. And I've heard nothing but incredible things. Kevin Carr and Brendan Rurick from our gym have gone through it. I think Marco Sanchez has gone through it as well. And it's definitely on my list of things to do, but his stuff is always sold out. It's really hard to get into when it ends up coming your way, but he's going to be at Renfones in Connecticut in October, which seems like in forever. But hopefully I can attend that one in a couple, I guess it's like, what, 8 months away? So we'll see. And also we had some questions on Twitter about maybe the best way to phrase this is how would you – okay, maybe let's talk about it this way. What are the benefits and what are the ways that you would progress someone to being able to do a handstand, let's just say, on the wall?
So a handstand on the wall needs to have a couple things happen first. Number one, you need to have good wrist mobility. You need to have good shoulder mobility. And you need to be able to keep your alignment. So I don't like people getting thrown into a wall handstand without taking care of some of those prerequisites. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to work on some hollow position holds, both prone and supine, so face up and face down. And then you need to do something to open up your shoulders into full flexion and your into active extension. So if you have your arm out in front of you and you try to actively pull your hand back toward the back of your wrist, if you don't get 90 degrees, you probably shouldn't be doing handstands because sure, that's going to take you to a place that you can't go. Mm-hmm. So that would be the prerequisites for sure. And then once you get to that, then I like to actually practice a lot of kickups away from the wall. So the wall can be a crutch. And I've actually seen holes in the walls of gyms from people putting their heel through the drywall.
Oh, jeez. All right, so maybe we should say if you're going to try this, do it against a brick wall.
Well, actually, you know, and I actually talk about this in my courses, but you want to, if you're doing the kickup, always do three progressive kickups. I don't like people just hurling themselves into the wall. I rather have them do three progressively higher. So the first two don't even have the goal of trying to get all the way up. It's just teaching you that weight shift and helping you figure out and measure how much force you actually need to pop yourself up into a handstand.
That makes sense. All right. Mm-hmm. And what in for why would someone want to do this? What are the benefits of doing a handstand besides, again, being like a really cool thing to do?
Well, I think the main thing is it's fun. And, you know, there are two things that will make a person continue to exercise. One is if they're having fun, and two is if they're not injured. So if you're not injured and having fun, you will basically be able to train for the rest of your life. And it almost doesn't even freaking matter what you're doing. You know, I'm not one to say that deadlifting is better than wakeboarding. You know what I mean? So I don't want to force my goals on people. I want to keep them healthy so they can do whatever they want to do, whether that's dancing or wakeboarding or martial arts or tennis or something like that. So, yeah.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about are parallettes, just because that's something that is not a super big investment for me for my home gym or whatever. And I've seen a lot of people use them and talk about the benefits of using the parallettes. And I was just wondering, you know, why do you use them? And also they're part of the program of the book that you put together. So I was just kind of curious, what are the benefits that people can see from them? Are they worth having in a gym? And maybe what are the best ways to progress the use of them?
Without a doubt. I mean, parallettes were kind of a cornerstone for the Ultimate Athleticism book. And
so I should
think
buy
they
these
also,
right now.
I really think that parallettes are hugely valuable. Number one, for getting people started on the L-sit path and being able to hit a good support position. Mm-hmm. So if you get parallettes that are high enough where you can have your hips in extension, but your knees bent so that your knees and feet are off the floor, learning that support position is hugely beneficial for the shoulder, because one of the things we want to do with the shoulder is we want to be able to articulate the scapula up, down, forward, backward in a full circle along varying lines of force. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in a support position or an L-sit, you're pushing force downward. Mm-hmm. When you're in a handstand, you're pushing force upward. Now, the reason in Ultimate Athleticism, the movement I chose for the main upper body push movement was the L-sit to handstand, was because you take your arms through from shoulder extension in a V-sit all the way up into shoulder flexion. So what you get is you get a pushing exercise along every single vector in that circle, all the way from flexion to extension. So rather than say, okay, I need to do my vertical pushing today, I need to do my incline pushing today, I need to do my horizontal pushing today, you kind of have one movement that does it all. Mm-hmm. And then working back to the L-sit part is you need to be able to push them down. You need to be able to push them up. You need to be able to push them forward. You need to be able to push them backward with straight arms also. And that's that all those muscles around the shoulder blade are really going to benefit most from those straight arm movements and from those scapular movements. So you want to be able to push and pull using those muscles around the scapula with a straight arm, and then also have the other muscles surrounding it join in for the ride.
All right. Made my purchase. So how would you like to program the use of those in for people? Where do you start, and how do you progress them from week to week, or from month to month, or phase to phase, whatever?
It totally depends. I like to do stuff like that along with an L-sit. So you start with a support position, that's level one, and you just push your shoulders down away from you as far as possible, make your neck super long, and try to hit a good solid position there. If someone can't hold their shoulders in the fully depressed position for 30 seconds, it means there's a significant deficit there.
Right.
And the exact opposite of that would be hanging on a bar and doing the same thing. So a straight arm scapular depression from there. So ultimately, you should be able to do circles from both shoulder flexion and shoulder extension with straight arms. And the pull-up bar version would just be the pulling vector, right? So we had the L-sits and L-sit to handstand and the pushing vector. Then we got like front levers and skin the cats in the pulling vector, if that makes sense.
Let's talk about chin-ups as well, since you kind of brought it up. You know, there's been a lot of talk, at least I've talked to, you know, coaches, a lot about this, and I'm always curious to get everyone's take on it. How do you feel about like rep ranges for chin-ups? Do you feel like we should, you know, go into the higher rep ranges if we can, or should we get to like a certain point, like a 5, 6, or 8 reps, and then just start adding load with vests and things like that?
I think it's twofold. You need to obviously use progressive resistance, I think, if you want the highest benefit. But at the same time, I don't see anyone who can do 25 chin-ups and 75 push-ups who's weak.
Right. You know? So like would that be your number? Would that be your number? Like 20, you know, once you can do...
That's probably where you're going to hit diminishing marginal returns at a significant level. But at the same time, you know, I mean, you got guys like Herschel Walker. Now, he's a genetic freak, obviously. Yeah. But I think that we don't soak up enough benefit from simple high-rep calisthenics. And another reason they're so important is they make your joints healthier. You know, if you're only doing like 3s and 5s all day, mm-hmm. you know, look at it. Look at the guys who are only doing 3s and 5s, and you're going to look at guys who look like they're a few steps away from a wheelchair, right. Generally speaking.
That makes sense.
You know, look at the guys who have really good longevity, like a Paul Cech and a Steve Maxwell, for example, who really practice what they preach. You know, they're going into their 60s plus, and they're still moving really well. And they understand the importance of exercises that are still going to get them stronger, but also going to help them move better. You know, the whole idea of, you know, 1 to 5 is strength, 6 to 12 is hypertrophy, and 12 plus is endurance is a total fallacy. Mm-hmm. You know, you need a little bit of all of those things for the most benefit. So it's almost like if you don't do one of them, you have this deficit. So you just want to make sure that you're at least sometimes doing all the rep ranges. You know, look at two perfect examples. You got the Justa singles program, and then you got super squats. Mm-hmm. And both of those are going to make people build muscle, and both of those are going to help people get stronger at squatting. But why would you choose just one? So it goes back to the whole idea that people are always trying to do their they're trying to differentiate themselves and say something that's either crazy or wild, or, you know, really try to badmouth everything else.
Really, in the fitness industry?
No, I've never heard that. But okay. I mean, it's like some people have this almost religious idea about sets of five. I mean, dude, yeah. Like, it's not a magic number. I mean, it's cool, I guess. It's not as cool as like 6 and 7.
But when
you know what I mean? Like,
I'm
no one
write a
does
program,
6 and 7.
Max, you or me could like cash in on this right now. It's like, call it the perfect 7 programs. We're just doing sets of 7. It's like the perfect balance between 6 and 8.
Can that please be the tagline on it?
Sure.
The 7s program, the perfect balance between 6s and 8s.
Yeah, I'll also make it the title of this episode.
I think that is absolutely fantastic. So as soon as you realize, though, like, all joking aside, that there's no magic rep range, there's no magic set range, you basically just need to get a training effect consistently for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the way to get a training effect consistently for a long time is to not get bored and not get injured. It's, I mean, excuse me, but it's so fucking simple. The problem is we try to sell people magic. Mm-hmm. So now they're ready for it. I was actually reading this great book on copywriting called Write Everything Right by Denny Hatch. And my good friend John Duquesne gave it to me. And
why are you reading that?
because I want to be able to communicate what my products offer more effectively. Okay. That's probably my biggest weak point in my business, is I spend so much time, basically my whole life, between you and me, really, trying to deliver quality information. And, you know, I get disappointed sometimes when I don't have quite the reach that I'd like to, or I see people who I think are total idiots who have huge followings.
And they have
marketing.
They have
exactly.
You know, their marketing is the best thing that they offer.
You know, and it doesn't come naturally to me, but I just try to do the best that I can. And so I'm trying to get better at that. But what was interesting about this book is it talks about how people's expectations have shifted because of marketing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now you have, because all of these people are promising the world on a silver platter, everyone's now expecting it. So you have to find a way to communicate things. And it's unfortunate that people can't just wrap their brains around the fact that you need to be consistent for a long time. I mean, people ask me all the time, like, how do you do this? How do you do that? I'm like, well, you know, in the last, let's see, I've been strength training for about 10 years. And I probably haven't missed a week in 10 years. And
you're younger than me, right? You're 29?
Yeah, I'm 28.
28, okay.
So it's been 10 years, and I haven't really missed a week. And that's the long and short of it, is I've just been really consistent. Now, I've done different things. I've done different programs. I've done different styles of training. I've blended different styles of training. But the main thing is I got a training effect, so I caused a little bit of stress to the system. I recovered from it, and then I came back and did it again, and I was super consistent. But unfortunately, people want 8-minute abs, not 8-year abs. And, you know, I think the people who are promising 8-minute abs are really to blame. You know, you can't really have integrity when you're promising someone 8-minute abs. It's total bullshit.
Well, I, you know, to play the devil's advocate here, I mean, I think, you know, some people would argue, yeah, you know, maybe the marketing is not 100% accurate, but maybe it's going to get someone off the couch. It's going to get someone into the gym. It's going to get someone maybe doing a better set of movements or exercises than what they've been doing before. And that's how I can sleep okay.
Totally. And I think there's a fine line, you know, like with finance, for example. If I said, hey, Kevin, I'm going to start this fund, and I think we're going to – I bet we're going to get – or how about this? We're going to get 50% returns every year. Great. How does that sound? Does that sound good?
Sign me up, yeah.
Cool. Give me all your money. Now,
okay.
Anyone who knows anything about investing knows that that is completely fucking crazy, you know. So I guess the line is, when are you trying to – educate someone on the value of what you have, and when are you just fucking lying about the results that they definitely won't get?
Right. You know, I want to talk some more about some of the standards that you may have for strength. And I did some research while we were talking a second ago, and unfortunately, like the name Perfect Seven has already been used. There's a product on Amazon called the Agape Perfect Seven Intestinal Cleanser. So it's already a colon blow product that we can probably not use that name. I don't know if they have it trademarked or not, but
that's really funny.
we'll have to keep throwing things on the board. But yeah, I mean, it's just fascinating that we were talking about the chin up stuff, and you mentioned doing 25 bodyweight chin ups and making sure that people are having some like standards or doing some more calisthenic like movements. Potentially, do you have any other things that you're like, oh, well, maybe you should, like, this is a standard that you should reach for, or maybe if someone is listening and they are bored and they want like a challenge, like this is the thing that you could potentially strive for and it would make sense?
Unfortunately, it's going to be completely individual. It depends on what you want.
Right.
You know, I know I can't do 25 chin-ups right now because it requires a little bit of specialization, mm-hmm. and it would require me to sacrifice some of the other things I'm doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So what I would say is sometimes do a lot of reps and sometimes do not a lot of reps.
I love that answer because that's programming. Right?
That really is all there is. You know, my friend David Delanave, he asked me for a quick tip about deadlifting.
God, I got to get him on the show. I'm such a piece of crap because I keep telling Dave that I'm going to get him on the show, and I keep I'm going to email him today.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. But he asked me, he's like, you know, what's like the most important tip for deadlifting? And I was like, sometimes do a lot of reps, sometimes do one rep. And he goes, is that it? I was like, yeah, that's it. There's nothing else. And that literally is pretty much it.
Yeah.
I really, you know, there's the secret to programming, everybody. Sometimes do a lot, sometimes do a little. Be consistent and don't get injured. And that's it.
Man, that sounds like pretty good, but it's hard to, you know, again, it's from doing this show for 10 years, it's just some of the things that is most interesting to me today is how people are trying to, like fitness professionals, how they're trying to package their stuff, how they're trying to reach their potential audience and the things that they could do better, the things that, you know, maybe they shouldn't be doing so much of, or I guess that's kind of the same thing. And I think it is just trying to figure out how to get something that is effective, but maybe too, I don't know if even bland's the right word, but it's just like, it's not like, it doesn't have the word explosive gains in it. It doesn't have the words like,
totally,
you know, massive, like massive something good or extreme,
right.
Or it has to have something in there that's going to show people, well, that's why this program is better than the other 15 programs that I've purchased before. And, you know, I didn't follow or I didn't succeed with.
Right. And I think as long as, you know, like you and myself, as long as we feel comfortable with whatever we're saying and we believe that it's true, then it's fine. But, you know, I don't need to sell snake oil to make money. It is a tough sell. Like, it's funny. Sometimes do a lot of reps, sometimes do one rep, be consistent for a long time. That is, for some reason, such a tough sell. I don't know why. Like, it's so simple, but I guess some people just want that fast answer. And you know, I don't really have a fast answer for those people other than maybe do a 5-minute flow every morning and see if that doesn't lead you to better things. So that's the doorway into all of this other stuff. You know, you do need a starting point. You made a good point. You know, if that gets them off the couch and started, perfect. You just do a 5-minute flow. Just move around for 5 minutes in the morning. And if you can do that, you can build upon that foundation. But you got to start there.
Let's talk a little bit about books because, you know, I seem to get the best book recommendations from people in the industry. And I'm still, like right now, I am on the Charisma Myth, which I stole from one of Jill Coleman's Instagram posts. But you recommended a book called Mastery, which is the next book on my list, but it's also like a 19-hour audiobook.
So, it's pretty long.
So before I dive into this, and also it's funny because even before that, I was looking at like one of the biggest, not like passions, I guess like one of the, like the secret things that I've realized that I'm really interested in because I love like the West Wing. I love like hearing about politics and I love, I guess reading about it. I was like looking for some of the best books on politics and the, you know, United States political system. And the author, Robert Greene, his book Power came up. So I purchased that already. And then it was like the same day that you recommended Mastery, which is another one of Robert Greene's books. The 48 Laws of Power, I should say, is the book that I was talking about. But what am I getting into? And also along with this, is there anything else that you've been reading that you think is applicable to potentially the audience that's listening?
You know, it's so interesting you bring up. So it's funny that Robert Greene would also have a great book that is said to be 48 Laws of Power is said to be in like the political sector. I think once you've read enough of these books, you really start to realize that it's just all based on a few simple principles that are just applied differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like there's not like a magic one book. It's just several principles that are pretty straightforward, I think, applied to different scenarios and different situations. Right now I'm actually going through a Dave Ramsey book called Entree Leadership that was recommended to me by Doug Larson from the Barbell Shrugged podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. He trains at the same jiu-jitsu school as I do. I had no idea. We've been training at the same jiu-jitsu school for years, never met each other once, but he recommended that book and I'm enjoying it so far. He also does some financial management type of stuff. That was actually one of the first exposures I had to managing finances. And it's simple stuff like, you know, get yourself out of debt, make sure you have a 6-month of expenses backup fund just in case, pay off all your student loans, then pay off all your house is the last thing. And, you know, it was a really good starting point for finance. And actually, I saw that Dan John wrote an article about managing finances recently. And, you know, I would argue that being able to understand finance, at least the basics, is one of the key components to being able to get what you want out of life, whether that's happiness or health or whatever, you know. The reason people write so many self-help books is because everybody needs help with something. You know, there's always something we don't know. They're like, I need help with finance. Or I'm not quite like that happy. But most of the relationship problems are financially related. And I think part of it is just getting out of the consumerism mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 28. I own my home. Last year, I basically was at the point where retirement was an option. And the reason is because I don't buy into the consumerism bullshit. And I try to just be careful with money. And I think that if people would, I guess there's a good book on investing. It's a little bit dated. It's by Andrew Tobias. It's called The Only Investment Guide You'll Ever Need. And my good friend Jay gave it to me. I started training Jay when I was 18 years old, and he gave me that book. probably because I was complaining about money so much because I didn't have any.
But that's every young fitness professional in this industry. It's just like, I don't make enough money, and you know, what am I doing wrong? How can I make more money? Do I need to go somewhere else? Do I have to do my own thing?
Well, and it's a sacrifice too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like when people would go on vacation, we were talking about this off the air, you know, I've never been on a real vacation. And whether that's right or wrong, it's not right or wrong. It's just cause and effect. Mm-hmm. So if you don't spend any money, you save it all, you invest it smartly, you're gonna end up with a lot. And if you spend all your money and you don't focus on investing in your own abilities, and you don't focus on investing in other companies, if you don't focus on investing in your future, then you won't end up with a lot of money. It mm-hmm. really is just cause and effect. I mean, literally 7 years ago, I had $0. I had no money. I mean, I was trying to start a gym and everything was in the gym, and that was it. You know, I didn't start out with anything crazy. I've been working since I was 12 years old. I helped my family pay rent starting when I was like 14 years old. And, you know, I think it's actually lucky because it taught me to start working earlier. And I think that's maybe a problem that some people get into, is they wait until they're out of college already before they've ever had a job. So they have almost no experience. To your point, like you said, you know, I really think that a lot of people, especially trainers, need some financial management. They need to understand the value of a dollar. They need to understand how money it works, and they need to be willing to invest in their future, whether that's in their continuing education, mm-hmm. or even books. You know, I mean, you really could probably spend $200, and if you actually read and applied the lessons in those $200 worth of books, you would probably know almost everything you know to be super successful and happy in your life. You know what I mean? Like, there's not one magic one. It's like, oh, let me read something about finance.
Let me read something about exercise. Like $10 books, because like a lot of these books now are like $10, and like you can get everything you probably need to have financial success, personal success, social success. Like it's all there. Like it's all been kind of sort of figured out.
It's all been figured out. I mean, look at the book Mastery. It's about how people build skills. Mm-hmm. It talks about how this person built these skills, how this person built these skills, and why they were able to do that. So if you apply building skills to everything else in your life, it's really all the same. That's all you're trying to do, is become more competent. And the more competent you are, the easier you find things like exercise and finance and whatever, you know?
Yeah. And then people don't need me to go into this again, but like one of the best things that I've done over the last like year and a half is I've gotten rid of so much stuff. I sold off this incredible collection of video games. I sold tons of this extra stuff that I didn't need in my life. And the psychological and health benefits have been astronomical. Like I've honestly just been a better person since I've done that.
That doesn't surprise me one bit. Well, that doesn't surprise me one bit.
I think in the start, like it just seemed like it's something that I needed to try. But I swear, like you, from people that I work with at the facility, people that know me in person, like especially over the last like 3 months since I really, you know, like I got it started like a year and a half ago, and now the last 3 months has been how I've done, you know, a lot more, and I'm literally just like a different person in public and, you know, with, you know, socially and as a coach. Like I think I'm much more of a person that lives in the present because
absolutely.
Of
that. Absolutely. And like I said, that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, unfortunately, the average time that a person watches TV now is up to 5 hours per day.
How do you do that? Where are you finding 5 hours to watch TV?
Well, usually there's like about 4 hours in the evenings. You know, people get home at 6. They will go 6 to 10.
6 to 10. Jesus. Yeah. Or then on the computer, I guess.
One or two in the morning. There are some people who watch TV during the day. Those are typically like unemployed people, some housewives, and the elderly. So those maybe skew some of it upward a little bit. But yeah. You know, even at 3 hours per day, you could take two master's degrees worth of classes in a year. every year for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
if you focus on, I don't know, just getting a little bit better every day, get a little bit smarter, get a little bit stronger, you know, maybe get a little bit nicer too. It really is, I think it's pretty easy and straightforward. You just have to have the wherewithal to develop the habits that will help you stay consistent.
Yeah, and then the last thing that I'll mention is that, you know, it's easier today to educate yourself than ever with even things like iTunes University. Like, you can listen to college courses for free as podcasts. You can get on Audible. Like, Audible is like, for $22 a month, I listen to 2 books. And then I usually end up buying more on top of that through through Amazon, because it's Amazon owns Amazon owns Audible, so you get the same stuff on there. And now for like all my podcasts, like back in college or even like earlier, like I used to listen, because I was in a game so much, I listened to like a bunch of video game podcasts, and now I've replaced that with things that are more productive and that are to be honest, like they're more to create or spawn more creativity in my day and to get me to think, because like I'll go walk with my dog and I'll have my headphones on and I have a microphone like built in, and I'll like be listening to a book or listening to a podcast, and it'll actually make me think of something completely different just because because it like gets me on a set path with my thoughts. And then I'll just like hold down the button on my phone, say, remind me in 30 minutes, this, and this. Like, oh, that's like a great idea. That's a great way to do something, or that's something that I need to do, whether it be like an article or a video or like whatever. So like that's one quick way that you can start doing, is just start replacing stuff that you feel maybe time wasters. Like in the car, I listen to music, you know, when I need to, like when I feel like it's going to help me. But it's most of the time it's like listening to books, and then 5 minutes, 10 minutes away from the facility, I'll put on music to get like, not my mind right, but just to like get, you know, pumped up for getting ready to coach or something like that, because that's what I like to do.
For sure.
But
well, and you can educate yourself anyway. I mean, being a lifelong learner is one of those principles in all the books that I've ever, I mean, you know, success leaves clues. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, all that stuff. If you just try to get a little bit smarter all the time, I mean, there are so many avenues to do it. I mean, really, unless you're getting like a technical degree or you want to get hired by someone where you need a degree, I think college is a total waste of time.
Yeah.
And I know that there are people who will vehemently disagree with me on that, but you know, it's okay to disagree.
Well, if you want to go to med school, you got to go to med school.
Right. I'm not saying like, grab like Grey's Anatomy and start carving up, you know, cadavers in your living room.
We'll go down to Mexico, open up a clinic, and you'll just figure it out.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, unless you need one of those technical degrees or a medical degree or something like that, you know, there's really, unless you're just completely unmotivated and you need a teacher to be yelling at you, you know, universities don't have like any secret information anymore. You know, back in the day when there were only books, it was like they had all the books and they had all the smart people. But now all that shit is online for free. I mean, I have learned so much about so many things. Just like you said, you know, you listen to a college professor giving a lecture for free from your living room.
Totally.
You know, just for fun the other night, I wanted to see I wanted to figure out how quickly my living room would heat up if I built a fire in the fireplace. Okay. You know what I mean? So then like 2.5 hours later, I had learned all about thermodynamics and radiation and convection and conduction and all the different ways that heat transfers. And, you know, ultimately I realized, I confirmed what I thought, which was that having a fire in the fireplace is a total waste of time. And totally inefficient in terms of heating my living room.
Just looks
with
cool.
Vaulted ceilings, right?
You looks know? Cool. The ladies like it.
Yeah, like if you sit close to it, that's one thing. But in terms of like heating the whole room, it's a total waste. Unless you have some sort of hot air that blows out of the fireplace, which they do have. They build those.
Yeah, and you know, just aside from like the iTunes U recommendation, I've learned so much of my technical skills through places like just going through YouTube or lynda.com is something that I always subscribe to, because if you want to learn how to do anything in Photoshop, Final Cut, coding, HTML, like if you want to really learn anything, you know, technically, lynda.com just has great video tutorials on how to do that. But it's like you just have to invest the time on on undoing it. You can't just buy the book. It will sit there. You have to open it. And that's why I think like a lot of people run into problems with this. I can't tell you how many people who I'll see like post pictures of books. I'll be like, oh, well, what did you think of that? Say, oh, I didn't read it yet. Well, you have to open the book. You can't just buy it. It's not the Matrix yet. You can't just learn Kung Fu by sticking a spike in the back of your head.
You probably do get like 5% of the benefit just from purchasing the book. And then the other 95% from actually reading it.
That's true. You at least get the thought process going, or you read the, right. the description of the book, so you got some things started.
Well, especially if you post it on Instagram, because then people will think you read, so right. that's probably good too.
Got to do it. Got to do it. Oh, man, this is weird. So, all right. We've been talking for over an hour, so we're gonna start wrapping things up. I just got my Amazon notification. I did get my Parallettes. They're going to be coming. They're the good ones, are the ones that are recommended, not I guess they're most commonly purchased next to Ultimate Athleticism, which is also available.
Really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's, you know, under the customers who bought this yeah. also bought, you know, these nice. Rings and Ultimate Athleticism. And that book's, I mean, we talked about it in the past, but keep in mind that that's available on paperback for $27 now. So you can...
It's on sale.
It is on sale. Like, Amazon is incredibly great, and you can purchase that. And talking about how much information that you can get for $27, especially in the day and age where, like, it costs a lot of money to sometimes go to seminars and stuff like that, and you'll use that as an excuse to not get education. Here's a book for $27. Start your education today. But, I mean, the big thing that you have that just came out, or that's going to be coming out around the time that we're talking about this, is Simple Shoulder Solution, which is obviously, you know, judging by the title, focusing more on the shoulder and things like vertical pressing and pulling. So what was your thought process behind putting this together? Did you see – you obviously saw a need in the industry for something like this. You had some thoughts that you wanted to share. But what can people expect if they pick it up?
Well, the reason I put Simple Shoulder Solution together was because having been in the industry for over 10 years and having owned my own facility for almost 7 years now, the number one thing that has stopped people from exercising that I've seen – has been shoulder issues. And so the other problem with that is people either try to make it too simple or too complicated.
Yep.
The two simple ones are like, oh, we'll just push through it, or we'll just avoid that. You know what I mean? But really, as I started to learn more and take more courses, and I mean, I've spent over six figures just attending courses in the last 10 years. What I realized that there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle that people kind of neglect, and it kind of works like a pyramid. You have to lay a solid foundation. And in Simple Shoulder Solution, I wanted to make sure people, number one, knew how to evaluate their shoulders, and number two, understood that there's an order of operations that's required when dealing with the shoulder. So, for example, we talked before about the glenohumeral joint, the ball and socket at the end, mm-hmm. right? That one is the most mobile joint in the whole body. It's also the most vulnerable. If you don't have a scapula that moves properly, that glenohumeral joint is going to try to move extra. So it's not going to be properly centered in the joint, and that's when you're going to get injured. If that scapula doesn't slide properly around a mobile thoracic spine, then that's also going to cause problems. So really what it is it's identifying the order of operations to prevent compensations. Mm-hmm. So you have to actually start with breathing and core strength, which will set the tone for everything else, sort of provides that foundation. Then on top of that foundation, you have thoracic and neck mobility, which provides a foundation for the shoulder blade, which provides a foundation for the glenohumeral joint. Mm-hmm. And what I realized, if you don't take care of the earlier stuff, no amount of stretching the crap out of your glenohumeral joint is going to bring you anything but more pain and more dysfunction. And that was what I saw a lot of, is I saw people doing these hardcore shoulder mobility drills. And I was like, dude, you know, you really need to focus on these other things first and make sure there's a proper foundation. It would be like if you were focusing a lot on building a tower on top of a canoe. You know what I mean? You have to make sure that you get on land first. You got to lay a good foundation. So I feel like, you know, and it's not a long read either. That's the whole thing. You know, with a book, you want it to be actionable material. Right. I want my goal when I write a book, because what I want when I read a book is I want to get the information as quickly and effectively as possible, and I want to be able to implement it immediately.
Yep.
So when I write a book, whether it's Ultimate Athleticism or Simple Shoulder Solution or Master the Kettlebell, my goal is to remove as many barriers as possible from the time you read the book to the time you can implement it. So with Simple Shoulder Solution, that's kind of what I tried to do, is I want to make this understanding of the shoulder much easier. I want to go through all the different components, and I want to lay out a logical plan so that you can not only get your shoulders moving better, improve your mobility, but also how to lay strength on top of it. Like the Skin the Cat and the El Sit to Handstand would be the ultimate expression of shoulder mobility through a wide variety of those vectors, mm-hmm. right? So that's basically it. You know, how do you start from someone whose shoulders are maybe a little bit banged up, and how do you get them to the point where they can do some very efficient and effective exercises? Because the goal isn't to have to do more. The goal is to eventually be able to do less, mm-hmm. But still be able to maintain all the benefits. So the road to get to that point can be long for some people, but once you get there, maintaining strength and flexibility is actually very easy if you just take your joints through their full range of motion every day in all the varieties of ways, which can be a roadblock for some people. But hopefully this will shed light on how to approach shoulder function and how to ultimately make them very, very strong.
Damn. Well, I've read through, like we were talking a little bit before, like I just got the book last night, but I've gone through, I guess, like 75% of it. And it's got my seal of approval. And it's gotten me to start doing bottoms up presses, because sometimes you got to eat your vegetables, man. It doesn't look as cool, but you know, it's sometimes totally. It's just the path that you got to take to where you want to go.
Beautiful.
And, you know, I will say if people want to help out the Fit Cast, you don't have to do this, but if you want to help out the show and you can, you know, in doing so, help support the production and the cost of running all this stuff and the time by buying this through the show notes at thefitcast.com. I'll have a link in there. It's an affiliate link. So it takes some money out of Max's pocket and it puts it into the Fit Cast's pocket to help pay for stuff and to make sure I continue to do this. But, you know, the reason why I say that is just full disclosure. And, you know, like I said, if you think I'm a big butthead, I want you to just go right to Max's site and buy it through there, because I think you should pick it up and check it
out.
Isn't
that so funny? Basically, what you're saying to the audience is, who do you like better?
Yeah.
Pick your
favorites.
Like, who do you like better? If you like Kevin better, you got to buy it through the FitCast. If you like Max better, buy it through SimpleShoulderSolution.com.
I mean, who delivers more free content to you every week?
Ooh, that would be Kevin.
But
more weight. That's also something, right?
That's true. We'll have the debate later. We'll make sure we have, time for comments and rebuttals in the format of a CNN debate. But you brought up a good point. MaxShank.com as well. Where you should be checking out Max's stuff. You should be making sure you can see what he has coming up in terms of events. And also, we were talking about Mastery before. And it actually has like a really great set of articles on there where you do book reviews. You actually like talk about the books that you've read, and you can help people make better purchasing decisions by doing that. And that was an idea that I was thinking about doing a long time ago, but I'm like, that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
So Max did it.
I totally hated every book report I ever did, and often would never, and often would actually not do them. I would kind of evaluate how many points I would lose in school if I didn't do a book report.
Right.
And the total irony is that now here I am out of school and still doing fucking book reports.
Love it. Well, that's the way that the world works, and it's personal evolution, so it's good.
Right.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode as well. Don't forget to check out the show on iTunes. If you enjoy it, you can submit a review on there. It helps elevate to the quality information that we're hoping to deliver through these podcast. And you can also follow Max and myself on Twitter at Max Shank and also at Kevin Larrabee at Fitcast on there. You can find us on Facebook and you can use and on Instagram. So you can find us through all those great social media things to see us doing cool stuff. You can see Max's 5-minute flows. He actually has a group on Facebook where you can check those out, where you literally post them daily. And also sometimes you're also getting stuff from other people in the groups. You can get some cool ideas on things that you can do first thing in the morning for movement. And you can also see Max's ridiculous bottoms up press, which is just, damn, it's just impressive. What else can I say? So I'm gonna wrap this one up and I'm gonna take my dog for a walk. But Max, thank you so much for coming back on. I feel like every time we do one of these, it just gets better and better. So we shouldn't wait too long to do another one.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for everything you do. And really appreciate you having me on. Thanks for your vote of confidence for the Simple Shoulder Solution book, too. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, guys, go check it out. And again, we'll see you in about a week. Take care.
All right, brother. Take care.